Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are trying to figure it out and find their way through this crazy little thing called life, love,
Liberty.
I'm trying to bring back the old magic. You know what? We're going to start again. You can leave this in.
Okay. I like again. It.
It's fine. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are trying to figure it out. What is it? We don't know. Faith No More asked, and we still don't know. What is it? What is it? That's right. We're no longer a Sheryl Crow stan account. Now we're a Faith No More. I'm bringing you into the 90s alt-rock, Dwight.
Oh, my goodness. This has been such an educational month with you being off the road. And just, your stream of consciousness of whatever you listened to in the last week. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
I don't know about your mental well-being, but I'm having fun with it.
It's funny you should mention that because I got speaking of two being the magic number, I got not one, but two different people reaching out to me after last week's episode to make sure that I am okay. And here's the thing. This is not clickbait just to get people to go back and listen to last week's episode if they haven't yet. But I thought I was just being very realistic and like, hey, this is kind of just where I think my career is going to be. But apparently in the world of comedy and nonstop delusion and like, we're all going to make it. You just got to believe in yourself. That sounds like a suicide note, apparently, when you're like, hey, I think I've hit the ceiling on my my career. Everybody's like, are you okay?
Are you all right, dog?
I feel like I'm okay. I feel like I'm just being practical about things, you know.
I thought you were being very honest of how you felt in the moment.
Yes.
But I thought it was a thing that happens like every, you know, twice a year. Mm-hmm. Where it's just like, I think there's nowhere to go. And like I said last week, you'll probably have like some shows down the line that get that energy back for you. Or maybe you'll just be a comic who everyone checks on every single week, like old school Mark Maron. All of his intros were like, yeah, I called and had to talk to somebody for 30 minutes because everybody thinks that I'm not doing okay.
Yeah. Well, it's great to, you know, first of all, it's just nice that people are thinking about me. Let's just start there, even if it's not the best things. No, I feel like I'm fine mentally. I mean, I'm under a lot of stress with my family stuff going on right now and, you know, with my brother and everything. But comedy wise, maybe I don't see how negative it sounded and maybe it was kind of negative. But like, as I said last week, I still am loving the hell out of performing. You know, I did spots this last weekend that were super fun. I've got stuff coming up. I'm looking forward to all of the actual standing on stage and telling jokes to people.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I don't think I'm going to be the next Matt Rife.
Damn it. He's not too hot to know. When we started this, the goal of it was to bring a realistic view of what it's like from our perspective and just to give like an updated weekly account of that. And I think we've done a good job of not bullshitting people.
I agree.
Like, and just at least holding each other accountable and asking each other, like, how are you really feeling right now? And this is part of it. Sometimes you go through lulls and sometimes you go through delusional times where you're like, I might be the best comic in the world. And then the next week you could be like, I am trash. I've spent the last decade so that I can go bomb in, you've guessed it, Michigan. It's always Michigan that it's like, I should have went to accounting school. That's what it's called, right? Accounting school?
Accounting school. Yep, I think so.
Majored in accounting.
Well, if we are going to hold ourselves and each other accountable, I need to hold myself accountable also, because last week's episode, I shouldn't have brought that bullshit onto it, because it should have been a celebration of your regular getting released.
Mm-hmm.
For new listeners, that's what we call specials. We call them regulars.
The regulars.
You know, and I just like, you know, I haven't been in therapy for a while. I need to get into therapy. That's the real underlying thing here is I'm like dumping this garbage on you and on the listeners, and I just need to pay someone to take it.
This week's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. So
I wish. Have you looked the prices on BetterHelp? It's fucking expensive.
Is it really?
Yeah, dude. Oh. It's like, yeah. I looked into it and I was like, oh, well, I guess I just have to wait until they have another opening at Catholic Charities again so I can get back on that sliding scale therapy.
Yeah.
That I was on. Yeah, no, it's fucking pricey to do BetterHelp.
Just to not leave your house to do what we're doing right now, right? That's part of this. It's just an app.
It's an app on your phone. Yeah. You know, so it's like you got a new, you got like a bestie who, you know,
how's it work? Is it like a robot?
You think they're using ChatGPT on BetterHelp?
Yeah, well, I do. I really do. Like, someone had a joke about like OnlyFans models just hiring AI to be like, yeah, I'll suck that dick. It's like, like, is this what this interactive therapy is?
I only know one person who's ever used it. And from their description is you have like regular sessions, which are video chat sessions, right? Which almost ever all therapy moved to that during the pandemic anyway. So that's not that unusual, right? Yeah. So, but then there is a session where you can also, if you're feeling low or whatever, and it's outside of your regular session time, you can text them. But then it's like, are they charging you per text? Is this like an, like an 867 number? Party chat.
Oh man. There's a concept.
Yeah.
There's a concept.
You know, your thing about the AI or whoever's joke that was about AI writing for OnlyFans, John Michael Bond, a very funny comedian out of LA, he's friends with a very successful OnlyFans person. And she actually hired him to do the chat stuff because she just was so busy. So he pretended to be her.
That's incredible.
He has a bit about it and about how, like, you know, at first he's like sympathetic, like, oh, they're just lonely dudes and she's a hot chicken. And then it just wore him down. And so he, like, now he has the understanding on a small scale of what it is to be a woman in our society.
Yeah.
With just every guy going, is it big? Is it the biggest one you've ever seen? Yes. Yes. It's the biggest one I've ever seen. Yeah. But shout out to John Michael Bond. I don't mean to be like doing some of your material on the podcast, but it's very relevant and a very funny bit.
Yeah. So, I dig it. But yeah, I don't mind, like, we're friends outside of just being quote unquote coworkers. So it's a real thing. Like, sometimes I think it's cool that people reached out because you've been doing this for a minute and you have a lot of friends that do care about you and want to check in. But yeah, I just thought you were being honest, and it wasn't like, you know, if I don't work in the next week, then I'm quitting. What really concerned me was, like, you know, if you got that job and then, you know, you wouldn't have been able to do this as much. And then I think that probably would have been sad for you eventually, maybe not at the outset, but like, hey, I just want to fuck off and get on the road for 10 days.
Yeah. And, you know, and if I would have gotten a job, and, you know, in complete transparency, depending on what happens with my brother when he transitions home, which will be next week, as we look into that, like, I already have some shows and stuff where I can't be there for him. And so we're going to have to hire like day nurse people who come in, you know, if hopefully, knock on wood, he continues to get better and better and better with like outpatient rehab and stuff like that. And he becomes very independent. But there is a small, you know, possibility that he doesn't. And then, like, he also has no income.
Right.
And I found out today that getting on disability in the state of Indiana can take anywhere between 3 to 6 months.
What?
So I might, like, so I then I'm figuring out, like, do I go bar back at a buddy's bar to make money to pay for my brother's day nurse situation?
Right.
Or just, or you know, and so, like, what becomes the scenario in that point? So there is still a possibility in the next couple months of me not being able to do comedy that much. That being said, here's my dates. Okay, ready? I'm gonna plug my dates.
We should plug our dates much earlier. Plug the dates
much earlier. Yeah, we could do it now. Yeah, so I am going to be headlining Helium in Indianapolis this weekend, July 27th to 28th. One show each night in the upstairs room. It's small, it's intimate. Downstairs in the big room, Tommy Davidson, who will be teaching you how to be a player. I will be teaching the opposite of that. I will.
It is like the stark, it's like the starkest opposite upstairs, downstairs. I would love, I'm coming to probably see you on Saturday, but I'm going to go see that Tommy Davidson show.
You can pop into that, like that. Yeah. The little balcony there and look on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
See if he's still doing the cat drinking a soda or whatever.
Yeah. I went to see, I'm not sure if I talked about this. I did go see like an old school BET comic at Helium. He did the same act because I went home and watched it on YouTube. Same blocking, same beats, with just like half the audience though. The audience like half full instead
were
of
they,
like,
but were they on board with it even though they knew it? Like, were they just like,
yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of. I also think like that was 20 years ago, so not everybody had seen it.
Right.
But it's like very, you know, fat shamey, and I don't know. You can't be racist if you're black, right? Clarence Thomas. I'm like, this
so
is
what
racist.
Did he say about Asians? That is the big thing in black comedy that I notice is like they still think Asians are fair game. Like,
yeah,
not all black comics, but in quote unquote black comedy, like that style, they like they're all like, yep, we're marching in the streets, we're gonna equality. But now let's talk about how Asians can't drive. You know,
still, yeah, the accent.
Yeah, the accent, for whatever reason, that's like their go-to.
I was like, don't you reach for your fucking eyes, dude. Don't do it. Don't you do it. Hashtag not all black comics.
Yes. Yes, clearly not all black comics. But, you know, it is something you do see more than once, I would say.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to be fair, like there are a lot of white comics that are also doing racist shit against Asians too. So we're not putting this solely on the black community. This is this is a comedy community problem.
It really is. It really is. We need to have a come together moment.
Yeah. So, all right. That's quite the sticky little spot we got into real early into the podcast.
I know. It's okay. I just appropriate it by wearing a lot of Bruce Lee merch.
There you go. Yeah,
he's my favorite.
He is your favorite. There you go. There was a thing on CBS Sunday Morning, a news program. I don't know if you ever watched that. It's for people 65 and older, pretty much. But they did a thing on this guy.
What's CBS?
It's the chronic bowel syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
That's all the medications are for. No, they did a thing because they just unveiled, I guess, the first statue of Bruce Lee in North America and in the United States. Mm. In Chinatown in L.A., I think, is where it is.
Nice.
And then they did a whole segment on Bruce Lee. And particularly they talked to who's the guy that does the Fast and Furious movies? Is it Justin Lin, I think is his name, the director?
You're asking the exact wrong person.
Okay, yeah. So the Fast and Furious movies are... they're basically like in the spirit of Enter the Dragon. And they
Sure, yes. Very philosophical.
Very philosophical, you know. Uh-huh. No, but they did this much bigger segment about Bruce Lee's impact, cultural impact, right? And they kind of got into his film work and things like that. And it was just dope. You should look it up. I'm sure it's on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
I definitely will.
Yeah. And then
all things Bruce Lee.
Yeah, you can see what Jane Pauley looks like.
I didn't know that I needed that in my life, but now I know.
Yeah. Louisville, Kentucky's own Jane Pauley. All right. Anyway, a little shout out there too.
That's so funny.
So that's my dates. Let's plug your dates up top too. What do you got coming up, man?
I've got tonight, we're recording this, doesn't matter. I'm closing out Helium, the contest.
Nice.
Those are always fun. So get my act together for that. And then this Friday, I'll be at the Buskirk Chumley Theater in Bloomington, Indiana at 7:30 with Brent Terhune. It should be a fun show. It's for a good cause, autism awareness. So get tickets and come out. Would love to see you.
Yes. And if you need additional autism awareness, just go to an open mic. Very aware.
Oh, damn. I didn't know this was a epidemic. Another one?
Yeah, that is a stereotype in comedy right now, is that every comic is autistic, but at least half of them talk about it. So I feel like it's somewhat based in, you know, in reality there too.
Yeah, it's the scale.
It's the scale of it. Yeah. So Yeah, man, that should be a great show. The theater's great. Are you still moving forward with the plan of getting camera crew to come and tape your set?
I don't think so. I was just talking to Brent about this today. We might do it on our own. The BCT is not the easiest place to get answers out of. So when I'm calling to like check on tickets, like I just called today, and like right on the precipice of justifying having a camera, but like I don't want to waste anyone's time. So like if we didn't sell another ticket, it wouldn't be worth it. But you know how this goes. You sell the most tickets in the days leading up
I
to
was
it,
going to
but
say, if you're on the precipice now, it might be worth it. I mean, we're taping this on Tuesday, so it's 3 days before the show. It might be worth doing it. But also, if you're thinking about doing it on your own or on the cheap, I mean, you guys have maybe already thought about this, but if you hit up some of the comedians that we know that also have high-end cameras and see if they can't help you out,
Yeah,
you know,
that's a
and you
good
can
idea.
throw them, you know, $50 as opposed to, you know, paying a camera crew, you know, $1,000 or whatever to come out and do it. So, yeah. But yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm gonna mix some old stuff with some new stuff and like some old stuff that I haven't had on camera.
Are we talking
So
like back when you had hair, old stuff? Like how old are we going on this?
boy, my naps be falling all over the place. You can't walk in my house without seeing some naps on the floor. One time a girl came over, she's like, "Why are there pubes all over the floor?" I still got that joke. I should pull it back out.
Man, it was immediate recall on that, man. Like you were just like you were on it.
I was still doing my my Comic View voice,
Yeah.
my Def Comedy Jam voice.
You know, and I haven't done that one yet. I think I'm gonna move into it. Actually, that's what I need to elevate my career and to become the next Matt Rife is to start doing a Comic View voice. That's it. I need to start doing some sit-ups and
Oh man.
appropriating another culture's lingo and mannerisms, and then
Oh
I'll be
man.
there, you know.
That's a that man doesn't do. I think he just worships the devil or something. It's ungodly.
So where were you at this past week? Were you doing spots? Did you have a week off or?
I did have a week off outside of the special coming out on Thursday. So that was intentional so that I told myself I'm not gonna like look at the numbers. Which was very important to me. And then an hour and a half in, I was checking the numbers because I'm weak, Matt. But I've done pretty good. Like I just hung out with a bunch of friends and family on Thursday, which was really, I think, the best thing for me mentally. Just to not like just to have everybody watch it on their own, and not have me at some viewing party, which is what I was going to do originally, but I probably would have been a ball of stress the entire time. So,
Oh, no doubt. Well, do you want to know what the numbers are? Have you looked?
oh yeah, I've looked.
Okay,
Yeah,
yeah.
the production company actually texted me and said we're in good shape given
Okay.
like the rest of the things that they put out.
Yeah.
It was at, I think it was like 2,100 after day one. And then it kind of slowed down. And then the last day it started ticking back up. So,
Well, that's good. Yeah, so you're sitting at 4,300 right now, 4,300 views.
it's.
And it's only 4 days ago that it came out. So you're averaging over 1,000 views a day.
We'll
You
take
know, and I
that.
understand that first one was like the big push, or now it's, but yeah, so hopefully you're now gonna see the kind of like the second bounce on it. And also, I mean, fuck it, I'll do mine. Like I was gonna say, I think you've got more views on yours in 4 days than mine has gotten in like months. When did mine come out?
Well, mine dropped the same day as Jeff Asmus's, and he had like 90,000 in day one. So I'm not. He's got a much bigger fervent fan base that we've talked about. Like I can't activate a group of incels like he can, which but it's like the reason I didn't want to like keep staring at the numbers is because I know that I would just do that, like, and that doesn't help.
No.
Like, it's out there. People are going to watch it. They want to watch it. A lot of people reached out and said really nice things. I've seen my Instagram numbers go up quite a bit, like
good.
A big, like 350, which is
350 new followers.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was
great.
Insane.
Yeah.
It was
that's
insane.
Great. Yeah.
So, you know, that was the big thing, but the goal is still the same. It's like, all right, get these fans, quote unquote fans, I'm using air quotes, to come to live shows when I post dates. Mm-hmm. Like, that's still the end goal, but it's been really cool, man. The feedback's been really cool. You get a lot of support from your own community when you do these things, which is always makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah. You know, you're taking that win, but it's still the Gary Shandling Zen Diaries of what's next now. Like,
yes,
that's what I did today. It was just sending out avails like a crazy person. Mm-hmm. You can see my caffeine sweat. Yeah. I had like a nitro coffee and then I had a giant black tea. And I was like, let's go talk to Matt.
Yeah, there
Fire
you go.
Fire up, baby.
Yeah, I like it. Well, I mean, first of all, it's got to be like a relief, you know, it's out, onto the next thing, right? You're not stressing yeah. over, like, because we talked about it, like, leading up to it, you're like, oh, we didn't get the link as soon as we, you know, like, all mm-hmm. of that's done. It's out. It's in the world. You know, I'll get around to watching it one of these days. And no,
love you for that.
I watched it not the night that it came out because I was running a show, but I watched it the next morning. So within that first 24-hour period, I think I watched about 12 hours because I got it pretty early that day. Yeah. And I watched it. So within probably the 12 hours of it being released. And it's fucking fantastic. And I told you that. I messaged you. You know, I was there. Okay. At
you
the
were
taping,
there, yeah. You were there.
But, you know, that was back in January or February, whenever that was. So, you know, I didn't remember all of it. And if I can pay you a very specific compliment, which this was not surprising to me because we've performed together a lot over the years and I've seen you. You have such a focus on stage. And that's like the main thing I got from this special was like you're laser sighted in on every bit. And it's just like that there's so much intention throughout the entire thing. Right. It's like, you're not just like fucking around. It's like, you know, we talked about like how fun Rory Scovel and like, you know, like I just worked with Ryan Singer, how fun their sets can be. And it's just like this weird chaotic loose thing or whatever. Like you were just like, so like I present, I guess is the best way to put it. Like you're right there in the moment and on top of you're attacking every line. You know, Brother Ali has this line, I'm going to paraphrase it poorly here. It's like, I kick every, it's like, I never speak a word without kicking it in the ass on the way out. I'm paraphrasing it poorly, but he's talking about that idea of just like always attacking every single line that he delivers. And that's kind of how I felt like you were doing on this.
Oh, I appreciate that. Like, it felt like that had to be intentional because it's like, it does get like, it goes from like silly to kind of like ridiculous to kind of like, let's talk about some issues. And the way that I typically work on stuff is very loose until it's ready. And then that's the bit.
Right.
So I was like very ultra conscious about ordering things. Like, I think I changed the order. I played around the order a lot. So to get it down to the final order was like, all right, this feels good. Mm-hmm. And then just getting through. That's the thing. It's like, we're only doing, I did four shows, but we taped two.
Mm-hmm.
So I had those two shows the night before we taped.
Mm-hmm.
And then the day of, I switched two things around. And then like a light bulb went off. It's like, that's the way it should have always gone. In this like very specific linear fashion that I didn't see until like the day of taping. But yeah, it was like every bit was pretty much done. So it was just like ordering stuff. And I think we talked about that the week before we taped that it was just, you know, I'm not going to try to tag everything to death anymore. I'm going to figure out the order, the concepts there. And I think that it landed. Like I said, I'm super proud of it. I love those bits. And now I never want to hear them again after going through the editing process and working on it for, you know, a year and a half. So, but yeah, I really appreciate it. I think another compliment I got which meant a lot, is just a random person reached out and said, you know, kind of a similar thing, like being in charge of the stage and bringing the audience along with you and maintaining command. But they also said that they wish that I dove deeper into certain topics, like those hard to breach topics, just because that's the type of comedy I like. And honestly, you know, moving forward, that's the type of comedy that I'd like to do, not exclusively, but I would like to find a way to go deeper into things, which is weird to say when all of my bits are 8 minutes long anyway. It was like, man, I don't know how they're going to chop up clips for this. like, good luck. You guys do what you got to do, but man, good luck.
They're going to, like, here's what they're going to do is they're going to isolate, you know, because it's they got to just grab that attention. Yep. So the next clip that they're posting is just you going, where the white women at? And that's the entire thing. It has no context. And we're like, oh, he's just that kind of comic, I guess. He's just one of those guys. All right. But he does a great Asian bit.
Yeah, he does a great Asian. And then it just pans to the audience. Yeah. It's like, yeah, they're there.
they're
in the Why is he asking?
Yes, that's a rhetorical question in the state of Indiana. Where are the white women
at?
Yeah. All around you. Just look around. Yeah.
That's every YouTube comment has to, like, comment on the the actual place and not the joke, or like the people in the audience. Like, look at that dude to the left. He ain't laughed once.
Well, that's that's also what you were talking about last week. Like,
yeah, but so, that's my job.
Yeah.
Your job's to watch it. Watch me.
People are roasting the audience members in the comments.
If I was the comic on stage, I would have talked about his shirt. Boy ain't going no place.
Well, I think it's really great that you had that last minute, revelation of switching the order around, which is also a good, you know, it's a good reminder of, like, just because we think things are done doesn't mean we can't still, like, experiment with placement. As we can always do that. That is one of the things I will give myself some credit. I'm going to give myself some self-love on every episode just to fucking make everybody feel better about me.
But it's out of spite.
Yeah. All right, I'm not gonna kill myself, and here's this week's reason. I haven't seen Barbie yet.
Oh no, I gotta edit that out. We'll get it. Yeah, hate mail.
Oh, okay. No, I want to see Barbie. I'm not shitting on it. I'm being serious. Like, I want to see it. Like, that was my jokey answer, but I do want to see that movie because it's getting great reviews. It looks fun. No, to give myself a little bit of self-love, some flowers. While I'm not the best about really digging down and writing as aggressively as I used to and as I probably need to, I am very good about just flipping the order on things. Like, I'm pretty fearless about, like, I'm just going to start with this bit that I've never started with before and see where it goes. And I'll just move things completely around in my sets. And that's how it stays fun and fresh for me. And I stay in the moment, is like, to kind of not, you know, because for a long time I was so tied to my set list. You know, once I was, because I was like, I'm building the hour, I need, you know, and but you don't need to do that shit until the couple months before you are recording the hour. You don't need to spend two years in advance always doing it in this order, you know. And that's the thing that I finally learned, was like, oh, I can move stuff around and playfully, you know, and I can just drop entire sections, you know, which part of that comes with, you know, having other stuff I can pull out and things like that. But it is so amazing how just moving where a joke happens can affect the joke all over the place, make it better, make it worse. It really completely change the undertone of it, you know?
Yeah. For comics that are doing, like, showcase spots are, you know, not unimportant feature sets, but, like, feature sets where you're doing longer and it's not like an audition for your job. Like, try playing around with your set order. Like, it will, one, like you said, it keeps things fresh, but it will feel very foreign in a way that keeps you engaged in the moment on stage, because you're like, well, usually 2 + 1 = 3, but what if it's 1 + 1 + 1? You could still get to 3, right? But now your brain's working in a different way. And it's fun. Like, doing this should be fun, especially I enjoy the rewriting, like I'm not a person that comes up with like, oh, great ideas, or like great, like has all this like information flow that I can just put out very quickly. I enjoy the rewriting and the construction of a set. That's fun for me. I'm not sure if that's fun for everybody, but I take joy in it. And I think the more you play around with it, the more confidence you get, and the less important every single bit is to you. Mm-hmm. Like, because sometimes it's just like, oh, if I take out this bit that's not really hitting, then the whole set's fucked up. But that's not really the reality.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The more that you do it, the more that you can free yourself from being tied to your set list. It's a process. You have to get confident with it, you know. Mm-hmm. And at first it is scary. But yeah, you're right. You also learn, like, sometimes you'll just skip an entire chunk or the second half of a chunk or something.
Yeah.
And then you've survived and everybody still had a good time. And you realize, like, okay, yeah, it doesn't have to go A to B to C to D to E to F. It doesn't have to go in this right. very specific order. Another thing that's kind of like along the same lines that I think we get in mental blocks about our own material is, you know, a lot of comics like really try to order some things, like, so it makes this linear arc in their mind because I have to talk about this and then talk about this. Most of the time, audience doesn't give a shit. Like the same thing with transitions. Luckily, comedy's moved away from the transition of like, speaking of, you know, Asians, you know, I don't know why we're making that the theme of this episode. but yeah, like speaking of blah 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 as a way to softly get into their next bit, like the audience doesn't need that. Like if the jokes are good, just go on to the next joke. It's just fine if you change topics. You don't need to announce you're changing topics usually.
Yeah,
you know,
use it as a crutch in the beginning, and then like that's the take it out later.
Right.
Like if you listen to your sets, just like take that transition
unnecessary.
Out. Yeah,
it's unnecessary. But we do get locked in. This is the same thing. And I talked about this last night in class. You know, I was still drinking when I started comedy, and I had a bunch of jokes about being a drinker, right? And like like all these drinking jokes. And then when I got sober, I was like, oh, I can't. That's like 10 minutes of material I can't do anymore. And it literally took me months to just realize, like, oh, dumbass, just make it past tense.
Yeah.
Like every single one of those jokes, I could do it just by setting it up differently. Like I used to be a big drinker, and then here's the joke.
Yeah.
Instead of like, oh, who's drinking tonight? And then, you know, and it was just like, why it took me months to realize that is because I was locked into this is how that joke goes. And it goes with this intro into the joke. But when you look at the actual joke, it's like, no, that could be future tense, past tense, present. You know, it doesn't need to be. So we get there, like we get kind of our own blinders on, and it's always good to like try to shake it up because you'll kind of highlight some of those for yourself. If you're moving bits around and stuff in your set, you'll kind of realize where you've been like a little bit hesitant or scared or a little reliant on one thing or the other. So definitely, like, if we're going to give one piece of advice this episode, get up there, shake it up, you know,
roll them dice, baby, shoot them craps.
Yeah. It was Tyler Jackson used to have like all of his jokes just listed on like a big piece of poster board.
Pick one,
and he would just do it. And it was so, it was like literally people in the audience would just yell out 37, and then he would do that joke.
So good.
Yeah. So we do have a question of the week. Speaking of advice, let's get into this real quick. This question comes from Trent Babb. Trent says, hey guys, I'm a big fan. Thank you, Trent. That's very nice of you to say. The question is, I've been producing comedy shows for 10 years and currently have 5 recurring monthly shows. I'm going to go ahead and answer your question, Trent. Yes, Dwight and I would love to do your shows. Thank you for asking.
Yep. All 5.
Yep. And okay. I'm sorry. I'm continuing to read here and I see that's not actually the question. Okay. Comedy, everybody. Okay. Anyways, Trent says,
That's it. It's just like, Trent, let us do your shows.
Yep,
it's our time.
Well, yeah.
No
question. We'll answer your question at these shows that you put us on. No. All right. Starting over. I've been producing comedy shows for 10 years and currently have 5 recurring monthly shows, but I haven't learned the craft of getting sponsors. Could you please share your strategies on how you get sponsors for a regular 90-minute comedy show? How do you approach people/the businesses? How early and what prices and packages do you present?
Very specific. I love
this. This is a very specific question. Now, I have never I used to run a monthly show at the Attic for a couple of years, and you know, I'm a producer of Don't Tell Here locally, but that's not exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. I've never gotten sponsors for just a recurring show. I'm pretty well, actually all three of us are pretty involved with getting sponsors from Limestone, but that's a very different thing.
Yeah.
Now you with the brewery shows,
yeah,
those I've had fact, sponsors. Are sponsors, right? So yeah, why don't you take this one and run with it?
So this is just something that I've researched out of my own interest and necessity, but I think common knowledge on this is that it is a just like we say when we're sending out booking emails, it's like you're going to take a lot of no's, you're going to be left on read a lot. So volume and relationship building, you want to be able to leverage the fact that you have, you know, for Trent, he has five different shows. That's five different opportunities for a sponsor to get their product out there. My first sponsor I ever got was Anytime Fitness, which we did like a fun photo shoot because the show's at a brewery. So he let us come in with like a can of beer while we were on the machine. Sponsored by Anytime Fitness, like work your, earn your beer or whatever the hell we said. But I think it's on you to try to make it fun, you know, present their product in a funny, interesting way. And then use that leverage of having all these different venues. If it's just like, you know, I only had the one venue and we just sat down and talked about what works for both of us. Mm-hmm. I just was looking to offset my marketing budget. So I was like, if we can do like $200 a show, like I didn't send him a professional,
right,
you know, sponsorship package with different levels. But if you want to do that, I would say, take the festival approach. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to talk about what you do for Limestone, but like,
yeah,
I think it can be as informal as just like going, like just cold calling and like, hey, we got this cool thing, to as formal as sending out a full sponsorship package.
Yeah, so from our experience with Limestone, I will say, and I think this is very transferable. Did you know the Anytime Fitness guy beforehand?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So personal relationships are going to be the most successful approach to this. And second to that is if you find a local business owner who is a fan of comedy. You know, with Limestone, the reason that we had Mother Bear's Pizza on so early is because Mark Hyduk, one of the co-owners, is a big fan of comedy. Same thing with, we had for many years, we had a sponsor for the festival, Express Personnel Professional, it was a temp agency, Express Professional Personnel, I think is what it was, the full title of it was. It made no sense for them to sponsor a comedy festival, but Tim Tucker, the guy who was the local franchisee of that, was a huge comedy fan.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got other ones who see it more as all of our beer sponsors have always seen it as a way, as a smart marketing tool to get their name out there in the community in a fun way. Again, that's the big thing, is you're selling fun. You're attaching their product with a very fun night. And so, you know, the ones that have the personal relationships and that, and I did not know Mark Hyduk before he became a sponsor. We've become friends since that, but he was just a guy that was into it. And so, you know, we have like an actual package that we send out. You know, success breeds success. It's been easier for us to get new sponsors or to replace like a beer sponsor when we had a changeover there because we do have a track record there, which helps. And also being able to point and say Cook Medical is a sponsor and has been for several years. Mother Bears is a sponsor and has been for, you know, like there's just like, oh, these other local institutions are backing the festival. This is probably a smart thing to do, if for no other reason to have our name alongside theirs. Right.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of a secondary kind of selling point there. I've done a lot of shows in Colorado that have sponsors, you know, and again, a lot of these tend to be out there. It's obviously like weed, like different like dispensaries. I believe that Trent is in California. I thought that I stalked him on Facebook when I got this question.
Love a weed sponsor.
Yeah.
We'll make it fun for you, baby.
Well, and the thing with a weed sponsor too is like weed dispensaries, much like breweries, are kind of printing money.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of money to throw around. It's so it's not a big deal to get a small sponsorship from them. Small for them, but, you know, sizable for you.
Right.
You know, you still have to put in the work and the relationship, and you have to show a return. And sometimes that return can just be like, we're having pack shows that your name's getting in front of. And then obviously you can also do the thing. Here's the marketing, you know, plan. These are all the things that your name is going to get attached to. Like, we're going to do this much in social media ads each month, you know, which will list you as a sponsor, et cetera, all that kind of building it out. As far as the pricing, it really depends on the market and the shows, how big your shows are. I love the idea that you came out of the gate with, Dwight, which is like leveraging the fact that it's five different shows.
Yeah.
Like five different monthly shows. That's like, that's pretty, should be pretty attractive to a business who is trying to, you know, get in front of young, you know, 20 to 40 year old people. I'm trying to think who would go to like usually bar shows, comedy monthly shows, kind of comedy shows. Right. And so 20 to 40 is a pretty, you know, desired demographic for a lot of businesses. As far as how early, I mean, it's never too early. Like, you know, it's really on your end, how quickly you can turn around and deliver on what you're promising.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're saying, we'll put you in all the social media ads. Well, you know, there is a lead time on some of that stuff, you know, and also if you're in a place that still has an alternative weekly and it makes sense to put ads in that, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think a big thing that we do with the festival, and you talked about this too, with like the way that you approach your sponsors for your shows, is a lot of time you use sponsor money almost exclusively for marketing.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what it gets earmarked towards. If you get enough sponsorship money, then yes, okay, can also start paying for talent and things like that. But if you can get it to pay to get more people in the door, it just becomes a self supporting cycle.
Yep.
Because then they're going to see like, oh, we've got a bunch of people, these shows are packed every month,
mm-hmm.
and that we're sponsoring, this is good, let's keep sponsoring it. And their sponsorship is what allows it to stay packed every month, right?
Yeah. So yeah, that makes sense
there. Yeah. I have one more thing I'll say.
Go ahead.
And then I would say also that this is something that I've done and I think is just a generally good approach, is you also have to be very loyal to your sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have a, you know, you don't have two different dispensaries being sponsors,
right?
You know, and particularly if you're running multiple shows, I think you would kind of want to buy in for like, okay, I can have one beer sponsor and one dispensary sponsor and like one pizza sponsor and one local insurance agency who the guy just loves comedy or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
because famously the Boulder comedy show has been sponsored by a dentist that lives in Boulder.
Yeah,
has for 10 plus years, and he always comes to the show. They make a big fun a bit about it, you know. Mm-hmm. It is weird, like, why is there a dentist sponsoring this comedy show? And he's just into comedy, you know. It's just like, so but he's the only dentist that sponsors that show, and that's important.
Right.
So you got to show loyalty back to the sponsors as well. Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. I was actually going to bring up Denver Comedy Underground, the way they use funds. I think they're sponsored by a pizza place. So if you buy a ticket to the show, I know you get a free slice of pizza, and a free drink. So that's just like another way to get people in, get eyeballs on the product. So just being creative with it like that is paramount. And honestly, don't be afraid to go big. Like Long Drink is a new company that I see sponsoring a lot of Don't Tells around the country. It's a canned cocktail that's new. They're trying to get their name out there. So that's just more of an opportunity for everybody. Like I had a rep talk to me after my show last week. It's like, hey, let's work together. And I said, I'm done running shows. I never want to do this again. I said, no, I got their contact information. But I would say with how big of a part social media plays in all of this, just watch what brands are sponsoring other shows and don't be afraid to ask, like, how did you come across that? Or just, I think the more you ask, the more you'll see. It's like somewhat luck and somewhat just, like you said, keeping those relationships intact. So it's funny how many of the same skill sets that you have to use for getting booked and, you know, getting a sponsor and keeping a sponsor coming back year after year, like you would want to a comedy club. It's just like, you know, make contact. And when you finally get it, then show that you're a good human and deliver on what, you know, you say you're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, the thing that, you know, it's always amazing to me when people don't do this, but, you know, like doing a trade out of comp tickets to your sponsor, even if it's not part of the official sponsorship deal, which it could be, mm-hmm. it's like, you give us X amount of dollars per month. You'll be the sponsor of these five shows. And we'll also give you, you know, two tickets to each show. We'll give you 10 tickets over the, you know, course of the week, you know, if it's a local business that wants to use them or things like that. The people who actually work in the business may not want to go to five comedy shows every month, but they can then use it as ticket giveaways through their social media as a way to drive engagement into their social media. And it's also pushing your show. You know, this is the thing we do with the festivals, like sponsors get a certain amount of ticket credit, you know, and some of them take it almost all in single show tickets for the big shows, like the Melissa Villaseñor show or whatever, because they want to do giveaways through social media as a way to drive engagement to their page. But the whole time, they're also still driving engagement for us at the festival. They're still pushing the festival. It's great. It's a win-win for everybody. So that's something also you can build in that's a no cost to you. You know, it's like, I guess technically those are two tickets that you wouldn't sell, but if it lands you, still you a sponsorship that's like, you know, way over that, then, you know, it's a win.
Yeah. So, more people in the room is always a good thing. So
but that is a great question, Trent. Thank you for asking it. Also, he did also put it at the end, thanks guys, and don't worry, Matt, it gets better. God damn it.
That's three. Everybody's That's checking three. In on Matt.
Yeah. Thank you for your concern, Trent. I do appreciate it. If anybody else wants to talk me off the ledge or send in a question for the podcast, you can do that at the Gmail account, which is mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. Always love when we get questions. This is an out of the blue question that I don't think either one of us would have expected. And it was good for us to put our thinking caps on. And hopefully that helps a little bit, Trent. And yes, I was doing the comedy bit up top, but yeah, if you ever see that Dwight and I are out in your area, we would love to do your shows.
We really would. Is your summer looking as slow as mine? The wind down?
Man, I've been happy because I got a couple, I just booked something. And so my summer and my fall are both pretty empty, which again, might be a blessing in disguise because I don't know how much hands-on I'm going to have to be with my brother for a long time. And so trying to make it both work, you know, but yeah, man, I got a couple of things in August and then it's pretty barren out there. But I've also been, you know, personally, you were doing the work and sending out all the avails and stuff. Like I kind of held off on that because I just don't know how far away from home I can go. So if anybody's listening to this, you know, that has a show or a room that's within like an hour or two of Bloomington, Indiana or Louisville, Kentucky, then I can do those. I can make those work. But I can't go on like the, you know, a West Coast run just yet, Trent. I'll hit you up next week, next month, next year. I meant to say next year, but the comic in me kept going, no, you're not going to do it now. You need to go above that calendar.
No days off, dog. No days off. Yeah.
I did do some shows last week I was going to talk about, but you can, because like, I just want to give a shout out. I've been trying to use my time down in Louisville to my advantage because it's a bigger city. They have shows pretty much every single night. I did Anam Chowdhury's show, Stand and Deliver at Kaiju. I love doing that show. It's just a fun little back room. It's just fun. I just like her energy a lot, and I like the show and the way she runs it. So that was good. I worked on a bunch of new stuff at it. I took, you know, I was inspired by you, honestly, and like our conversation that day. And I was like, no, I need to fucking work on some shit. And so I went that night after we taped last week's episode, and it felt good. And
Kaiju's Friday's a dope spot. I love that spot.
Dope spot. Yeah. And then Friday and Saturday, I did guest sets for Ryan Singer at Planet of the Tapes. Those were all fantastic shows. And Ryan is such a great comic and great human being. And it was inspiring to watch him too, because I feel like we were kind of pushing each other, because like the second show I mixed it up and did a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah.
And so then he came out and did a bunch of, you know, he's still doing like, he's working this new hour. So there were big chunks that he was doing, but then he was playing with the in-between parts. And then same thing, third show, I did a completely different set. And so I felt like I didn't talk to him about this, but also same with Reed Sedgwick. Reed Sedgwick was featuring, mm-hmm. and I felt like all of us were like, okay, oh, this is what we're doing? Okay, yeah. We're all going to kind of play a little bit? All right.
Nice.
So, but again, with Ryan, I mean, he's so in the ether.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. No sets the same.
Yeah, exactly. But it felt good. It felt like a good kind of camaraderie. We're all kind of like going to throw some curveballs in here and there. And so it was good. It was a good weekend. So.
Oh, that's fun. That's much like full circle of full circle to what we talked about earlier is like playing around with your set actually is fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to get in that shout out for Planet of the Tapes and Anam and Ryan.
You did Don't Tell with Ryan too, didn't you?
We did. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. So yeah. And then the Thursday night in Bloomington, we did a Don't Tell up here and he crushed it. And that was like, you know, those Don't Tell crowds kind of tend, at least I'm blaming them, they tend to be hot crowds because mm-hmm. it's just like that, oh, this is weird, we're in a donut shop and we're having comedy, and you know, and everybody's brought their own drinks, so who knows how in the bag they are at this point. But yeah, we did a Don't Tell, and they were a great crowd throughout, but man, he just murdered like from the jump. Like,
yeah,
it was so good. And I think it's also because he was only had to do 30 instead of doing 50, so there was like he didn't take his foot off the gas,
right? Layup, you know? Drill.
Yeah, exactly. And I saw the same thing happen when we brought in Augie Smith a while ago. This Augie, because normally does an hour, and he's like, oh, I'm only doing 30, and it was just like bam 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 like the whole fucking time, and was great. So
that's honestly so fun, like coming off of doing like longer sets and then they're like, mm-hmm. hey, do 20. It's like perfect.
Yeah.
What really sucks is when they're like, do 12. I was like, that's different.
I'll do one joke, I guess.
I'll do one joke. That's funny. I did a set last night that was like 15 minutes that I did not care about. And mm-hmm. I feel bad, but it was still fun. Like I found like a chunk of like 7 to 8 minutes that's new
mm-hmm.
that I did. But then the other 7 minutes, I was just kind of really fucking around just because I don't want to do any of the bits from the special.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like a couple, then I did some crowd work and riffed around and then ended up closing on the Black History bit. mm-hmm. But it was also like the show started at 6:30. I got up there at like 7:15.
That is early.
It's in an apartment complex.
Ah, okay.
And so like they have the residents come down mm-hmm. and everybody's like, yeah, actually this one, I've done a couple of these and the age range goes from like 21 to like 31 typically, mm-hmm. which is still mm-hmm. younger than me. But this one is a little bit older, mm-hmm. which I don't know. It's still a show before dinner time.
Yeah.
It feels foreign.
Yeah.
But
I was doing that matinee show, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just like really loose. I was like, I did not prepare for this. But the show tonight I'm going to buckle down and go through some sets. If I don't die in this heat, I'm going to try to walk and listen to some sets and get back focused after my vacation weekend of the special coming out and birthday. So
happy birthday. We buried the lead on that. Like the special came out on your birthday and you didn't really make a big deal about that. It just happened to be when you scheduled it. I'm sure that's why you scheduled it. That way.
Yeah.
But then like, I didn't see you talking anything about your birthday online. I didn't see, you
know, I made one
talk
post.
About it.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't want the, it can't be like, I want guilt views, bait and switch, but also I want people to come see me for me.
Word. All right. Well, anything else that we need to go over? I do want to talk about next week. I'm going to make a note, like dig into this idea that you're never running another show, that you had a sponsor come to you and like, I hate this, I'm never doing this ever again.
I have show scheduled that I'm running. I'm just exhausted from looking at social media, and mm-hmm. being on social media is a big part of all of this, especially running a show. So that's it. It was like, it's been nice not to have to be on social media so much. Mm-hmm. Like the production company, like I'm promoting the special, but the production company's clipping the clips and they're just tagging me I just gotta log on real quick, hit accept, and then I can get off. So
yeah.
So I think that's been nice. I think it's helping my writing not being so distracted all the time.
No doubt. Yeah. Like, it's hard to jump back and forth. Yeah, man. Well, I think that that pretty much does it. Happy birthday, belated.
Thank you. Now that you've got the, you know,
this isn't social media. This is just us talking through computers at one another in real time. And happy birthday.
I appreciate it.
I think I also texted you on your birthday, but you were like, I'm hungover, fuck off or something.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably the day after was really rough. Really rough. Yeah, I felt it. But I want to say thank you to everybody who reached out, who's watched it, who said kind words, wish me a happy birthday. Sorry if I did not respond, but I feel the love and support, and I'm very overwhelmed. So thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope that we bring you joy. And please check in on Matt as much as possible.
Damn it. No, it's fine, guys. Just because I've been listening to Sheryl Crow's version of The First Cut is the hardest over and over again. First card is the deepest. I don't even know. Whatever that Cat Stevens song is that she did. Anyway, it's fine, guys. Everything is fine. All right.